Welcome to Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all of the time. Join me, your host Sam Wiles, as we discover the history, the music, and the man behind it all, Paul McCartney. To get in contact with the show, email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Hello, and welcome to the live segment of the show. Well done, you've made it past my maddeningly meandering pre-show ramblings. And though the extensive historical sections of this show are challenging in themselves, I do like to reward you with something a little fresher every now and then. The guest I have with me today is a first on the show, as he is the very first person to be brought back a second time due to popular demand, no doubt. Since his first appearance on our very first bonus episode all those months ago, I've been determined to collaborate with this gentleman again on a project, and once again something has come up that I'd just like to chat to him about, really. He's a very friendly chap, very chatty guy, and an all-around McCartney authority. He is, of course, Luca Perezzi. Hello, Luca. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, Sam. Thank you very much for this invitation. Very honored to be the first one to be back to the show. So I'm here to discuss in detail everything you want to know about the songs and the album Wings and the Speed of Sound.
Of course, there is never enough to know about these things, but we'll try and cram as much in as we can. Obviously, it truly is a pleasure to have you back on the show. I've been itching to get you back on it ever since we talked about your book on the last time. The book I've got right here in front of me now, Paul McCartney, The Recording Sessions, 1969-2013, which obviously has been a bible for the show, so I obviously can't thank you enough. For this album, I've gone back, I've listened to it a few times now, and I must say, even when I've been listening to it today, it's been decidedly divisive. But before we get too deep, what I will say is, obviously, I do try and get as much research done for these episodes as possible, but the one book I haven't read is the one that I just mentioned. I haven't read your book in regards to your thoughts on Wings at the Speed of Sound, Luca, so hopefully that'll keep things a little bit fresh. Maybe I've missed out a key quote or something, but hopefully it'll lead to some good debate and hopefully a juicy disagreement or two as well. So, you know, let's just dive right into it. Let's talk about the album that Wings released on the 25th of March 1976, which is, of course, Wings at the Speed of Sound. Was this an album that you came across early in your exploration of Paul McCartney's discography?
Yeah, you get to consider that I bought everything I could buy at the time when I discovered Paul and his music. So it was just a six-month period over which I tried to buy everything I could.
So
I can't remember. It was one of the first or something. I think it was maybe the sixth or seventh album that I bought. Or to say, my mother bought it for me, because at the time I used to ask my mother, go to a record shop and buy something for me. Just buy one, and so she knew the previous one that I got, and one evening, it was, I think it was a Monday or Tuesday evening, she came back with this album. So it's curious, because I knew before one song in another version. There was the Silly Love Songs in a version of Give My Broad Street. So it was quite an experience to hear the original version compared to the Broad Street version for me. But it's an album that is I like this album. I know it's not one of the best regarded album. It has the feature to have all the Wings members singing a song in an album. That is maybe not something that each one of us can appreciate so much. But all in all, it's a spectacularly recorded album. That is the best thing I can recognize. The production and the recording are really spectacular. About the songs and the value, we can discuss a little bit. But generally speaking, it's a mellow album. It's a very mellow album. And I think that Paul had a precise you know, plan in mind. So he wanted to build wings with a different kind of a different image. He was bound to tour with wings the whole world. So I think it was a deliberate move by his side.
Do you think this current incarnation of Wings, do you think it was the strongest of the lineups?
Yeah, I think so. I think so because...
It's an easy choice, isn't it? It's an easy choice, but I don't know. I feel like that there's just a certain amount of uncertainty. I mean, I had Lawrence Juber on the show recently. I think I've mentioned this before, but I'm starting to lean towards the back to the egg guys. They do seem to have... to have that strength. With this group, I feel like there's a definite sense of, you can feel that this was recorded quickly, that this wasn't polished to perfection, and that it seems just to kind of be churned out just to be the Wings album for that year, it seems. But oddly enough, it is their most successful studio lineup. Obviously, Venus and Mars was a massive album. This went straight to number one as well.
Yeah.
So... Do you feel that the fact that the album was recorded in 6 weeks is reflected in the songs at all?
Oh yeah, it's a little bit strange because but if we take a look for example also to an album like Venus and Mars, yeah, the period of recording wasn't very very different. So this was maybe recorded in an organic way. I spoke with Tony Clark, which engineered the first batch of recording, and he said to me that the first batch of recording was a little bit, you know, compressed because of the fact that they were started to rehearse for the upcoming tour. Well, the lineup of Wings, I think it's the best one, not because the other groups were not good. Absolutely, I like Lawrence Juber playing. I like Steve Holdy's playing. Mm-hmm. Just to name the two. But for the fact that Paul was at the time of this album was still convinced about Wings' future, and he wasn't. And it wasn't the same in 1978-79 when Lawrence and Steve came on board. And I think that is the difference. Paul wasn't convinced so much. I think he sensed that maybe he came to full circle or something like that. So I don't know what was in Paul's mind at the time of Wings, the Speed of Sound. Mm-hmm. It seems he speeded up a little bit the recordings, and maybe he could have chosen different numbers. We know that, for example, he wrote a number like "Girls' School" during the same vacation as "Silly Love Song." So maybe "Girls' School" could have been a nice rocker to balance other numbers that are, or the ballads that are in the album.
Yeah, like when you say it is mellow, that is the word you have to use, because when you go from Venus and Mars and then you've got Wings Over America coming up, it does seem that this is just an album that wasn't made with the same kind of purpose, with the same kind of, okay, let's make songs for this upcoming tour. And I think if it was designed like Venus and Mars, you know, to have songs that would be translated into that live performance, which is undoubtedly their strongest asset, then it would have succeeded. But when it's this, you know, democratic album where they're just taking it slow and they're not really doing their best, really, you don't feel that there's much effort going into this album, unless you're, you know, listening to something like Beware My Love, which is an unresounding hit. But it just seems like such a stark twist and a flop from where they were going with
Yeah.
and Mars.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we've said before, Paul will sometimes just have a change for the sake of it, whether it's for the better of the band or not. But it just seems like such a misstep. Unfortunately,
it was not critically acclaimed very well at the time. It was there were a couple of assessments that were not so good. Also, I think it was Rolling Stone that said that was a kind of strange album, and that Paul was there was a time when he was a great songwriter, and by the time of this album, it was a great producer. So basically, that was a criticize them. So, yeah, I agree partially with what you're saying, because the real album that was presented on the tour was Venus and Mars, because Venus and Mars was the current album when the Wings of the World tour opened in 1965. So maybe he just wanted to have a fresh product for the American tour. And in that sense, he was right, Paul was right. But it is built not for the live performance.
Yeah, like, because when you see what Paul takes out, I think it's on disc 3, side 1, where it's basically the Wings at the Speed of Sound segment mm-hmm. over the Wings over America performance. You see that he does kind of just plunk it all as its own separate thing. It's not a natural part of the show. It's like how Venus and Mars might flow into Jet, for example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when you look at the first half of the set lists for the Wings over Australia and Europe, you just see that Paul essentially used Wings at the Speed of Sound to fill in little gaps like Little Woman, Little Love, mm-hmm. and Sea Moon, all of these kind of earlier Wings hits that really weren't standing up with Band on the Run. And it just gives a kind of a sour taste to the whole affair. But don't get me wrong, I don't dislike the album. I don't dislike the album. It's there are many songs I do like. There really are.
No, I understand. But I agree with what you're saying, because I think that maybe Paul knew that he had two really big songs available. There were Sea Love Songs and Let Them In. And he wanted to just to find a place to promote the songs. I don't know why. Maybe he could have done just a couple of singles. Why not? Just put out Sea Love Songs as a standalone single with something on the B side, and then just put out Let Them In the same way. That could have been better, maybe. And maybe we can appreciate more a couple of nice B sides instead of album tracks. There was at the time also perceived maybe differently by the audience.
Well, I'm biased because I would rather just that time be taken up by songs from Ram. But hey, that was never going to happen, was it? What do you feel about the whole interpretation of the album? I think it was, it might have been in Rolling Stone, I'm not sure, where they were saying how Wings at the Speed of Sound was like a day with the McCartneys, and how Let Them In welcomes you into the album, and Cook of the House is Linda's introduction, and all of that. It seems like a very misplaced interpretation, really. Like, it seems to come out of absolutely nowhere.
Well, you know, Sam, that when someone listens to an album, well, his feelings can be different. It depends from the day when you listen to it, or the way you feel. There's a lot of different things in people's minds. So I never thought about this album this way. But I don't know. It's just an opinion. Mm-hmm. It's just an opinion. There's no.
Yeah, but then
there's no concept.
But to put that to print and.
I understand. You know, at the time of the release of this album, and during the 70s, and also maybe possibly in the 80s, well, the role of a critic was really important. So they perfectly knew this. So they just, if you're lucky enough to be a musical critic, and you can write everything you want about it, and you know that millions of people will read you. You have a certain power also to to change the sales of an album, partially at least. So I don't know. It's something that I just included in the book because I wanted that everyone that listened to the songs or read about the songs just have a flavor about what was going on at the time, because it's part okay. of the story. That said, it's something really, really strange. So I don't know what to say or to add about that vision of the album.
So do you feel that Wings at the Speed of Sound was more successful than, say, Wildlife or London Town?
No. Yeah, well, it's a matter of taste, obviously. So, well, wildlife was really let me find a word for this. Maybe a brave move or something like that, because it's Paul is a genius, obviously, as a songwriter,
and
has. Specific ideas. He had, I think, a clear plan in mind. So with Wings, so we don't have to forget that he had a precise plan. So he wanted to start a Wings with an album that wasn't very polished. I don't know. Other artists could have done a different choice. At the time, it was panned, obviously. It was not easy. I spoke with friends that bought the album at the time, because I'm a little bit younger, so at the time I was only two. But I got some friends that were teenagers and said to me, well, when I bought the album, I didn't understand what was behind. Nowadays, we can understand better. So it was a brave move, Wildlife. It has merits, I think. It's straightforward album. I like it. You know, with McCartney's albums, everything has got something particular. So you have to maybe to understand the whole thing and what is behind a concept of an album. London Town, it was one of my favorites. So really, after Ram, I would place Unbanded Run. I would place London Town just after this two, maybe on a pair with Banner Run, but not because maybe it's a little bit fragmented, but you can find some nice atmospheres all over the album, throughout the album, and that's what I like about London Town, for example.
There are many interesting noises throughout Wings at the Speed of Sound as well. Like right after Let 'Em In, there's some very weird sonic distortions before the Union of the Road, and there's some interesting almost sea shanty type sounds there before Sound Fairy Anne and Beware My Love and all of that. Well, actually, speaking of Beware My Love, is Beware My Love the great lost Wings song from this album? Oft forgotten?
Think so, but there's, well, Paul's catalogue is it still has a lot of songs that we can define as forgotten. Even though there was this project a couple of years ago, The Art of McCartney, that is first step in the right direction of discovering better this catalogue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Beware, My Love, it's another example of song that if it was in an album by another artist, it could be the, you know, one of the main songs. I don't know which is the reason, but if you put it on an album like Wings at the Speed of Sound, and after 40 years, it seems like forgotten. It is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can't understand why it's not bigger with fans. I mean, it is up there with things like Smile Away or Helter Skelter. Do you feel like there is another song that better fits the description of the Lost Wings song?
In this album or...
Or no, throughout the whole discography.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of things I can say. Well, I don't know, I can pick just randomly and...
Maybe something like I Lie Around or something like that from the...
Well, I Lie Around, I like it very much. If you analyze the song, you find a really incredible number of little ideas or something, the arpeggio of the guitar, the arrangement, the horn arrangement, a lot of things that were dedicated to a song that was a B-side of a smashing hit like Live and Let Die, so no one cared for A Lie Around. It was also sung by Danny Lane, and maybe that was a reason, but there's a song like I don't know, I can choose a little, really a lot of, but just think of a song like London Town itself. It's a very melodic song, it's a very good song, or Back to the Egg has got a couple of rockers that are really
Spin it on,
also they're getting closer. It's a nice song, or if you like the style, Baby's Request, it's a nice song, or Arrow Through Me. You have a lot of forgotten numbers that can be used by many artists still today and be a success. That is what I think that maybe during the conversation I will.
What's your opinion on Jimmy McCulloch as a guitarist at this point? Do you feel like he brought a lot to the band, or was he just a bit of a stand-in for Paul's ideas?
It was perfect for live performances. Mm-hmm. And I think that Paul, when he chose Jimmy, he thought about this aspect. Because if you look at what he did really in the studio, he started with a spectacular contribution on Junior's Farm. That is his best contribution on a Wings song in the studio. But then look at the smashing hit singles that Paul had during those years. So we don't have any great guitar solo on Listen to What a Man Said, for example. That was a number one. Then we don't have any solo on Silly Love Songs. So Jimmy maybe plays some chords, but I'm not sure. We don't have any guitar on Let Him In, and he plays bass on Let Him In. We don't have any guitar at all on With Little Luck. There was another number one in America. And by the time of Mull of Kintyre, he was out of the band, so Mull of Kintyre did not feature Jimmy. So if we look at this, what does it mean? It means that Paul conceived Wings as a medium for his music, and not his music as a medium for Wings. So when Paul has got an idea for an arrangement, he doesn't care about the fact that he has got two guitarists or something like that. There's no established lineup. So in the studio, I think that Jimmy contributed not only electric guitar solos, because Paul doesn't like to have very long solos in his song, but he contributed a lot of acoustic guitars, maybe a little bit of 12-string guitars. So it was a nice addition in view particularly of the live performances. But the personality of this guy wasn't right for Wings.
No, yeah, really. There are many stories of him and Jimmy in their conflicts. One of them I was reading about, which absolutely shocked me, was where like Jimmy was apparently going to shoot Paul at their farm up in Scotland. It was some very odd tale that I think one ex-member of the band's wife was peddling around or something. I'd never heard anything like it, but there are many odd stories about Jimmy being a bit of a tearaway, punching a member of the Sex Pistols and getting into fights and stuff. Do you feel like he was the best Wings guitarist, or does that remain in Henry McCulloch's hands or Lars Juber's hands?
Oh, it's a difficult choice because, when you get a guitarist like Henry McCulloch, Jim McCulloch, or Lawrence Juber, how can you choose? They are three really great guitarists, different styles. So if you like really a slow blues, guitar improvisation, well, Henry McCulloch was really the guy. You know, Jimmy McCulloch was maybe a little bit of rocker. Well, very fast solos. So if you like this style, he was the guy. And Lawrence Juber is maybe the most versatile guitarist of the three. So he plays a little bit, he plays very well classical guitar, he plays electric. So maybe it's between the three, Lawrence Juber maybe it's could be considered the most accomplished guitarist of the three, because he has a varied style, so we can play different styles at ease. So maybe I can choose Lawrence.
That's a very good choice, and that will help with the show as well. From one member to another, obviously Linda has a song on this album. It's almost impossible to talk about this album without talking about Cook of the House from one degree to another.
Yeah.
Was this song ever going to go down well with fans? Did Paul know how it was going to be received, or do you feel like he was possibly a bit blind to Cook of the House?
I think he didn't care about it, so he just wanted to. He just had the idea, and when Paul has an idea, he wanted to do it. So maybe just talking with Linda, that was his wife. Maybe he came up with the idea. Why don't you sing it? And Linda said, okay, and they did it. So I'm not a particular fan of this song, but I have to admit that if you listen to some live recordings from the Wings British tour in 1979,
she doesn't do bad. She
sang it well, I think. The live version is good. Version is good, and it's maybe better than the studio version. What I like about the studio version is, the ambience that they created for the song. You know, Paul plays a Bill Black's stand-up bass on the song. He plays a little bit of Barrel House piano. So there's a nice ambience in the song, and there is a nice anecdote that was popped up in the deluxe edition of Wings of Bitter Sound a couple of years ago, when Paul told that they recorded the harmonium in Cavendish Avenue's house, and so they just moved a mobile unit from Abbey Road in a garden, and they just had the wires coming from the mobile unit studio to Paul's house to record. Or maybe that was not the harmonium, but it was the noises at the end of the track. So they just recorded the kitchen noises that were recorded there through this method, and also the harmonium that we can hear at the end as introduction, I think, in Beware My Love, that was recorded the same way. So that said, it's obviously something that makes you say, "Oh, what a shame." Because I want to hear something different when I have an album by Paul in my hands.
Yeah, because this song makes me feel sorry that your mom had to spend that money on you, really, because it is a waste. It is a waste of a song. There are many songs on this album that seem like waste of a song. But before we get onto the whole democratic end of this album, when you look into things like Mary Had a Little Lamb, and you think, Paul is not above giving a big, fuck you to his audience. He will do something just to anger people, just to go against type. And Linda hate aside, there are many examples, Ram, for example, where Linda is a fantastic backing vocalist, and she adds so much to these albums. But it's not beyond the realm of possibility for me that Paul put this song on this album because he knew it wasn't going to be a make or break album. They're already under immense success. They know it can't really go wrong for them too much at this point. It's going to go to number one either way. So why not? Let's just put Linda's song on now when it least matters. And I almost get that cynical feeling whenever I listen to it, really. It seems like a bit of a middle finger to the fans, almost, which is good.
Yeah, I understand your point here. Yeah, it could be,
because Paul knows the criticism. Wings famously read all of their critics,
Yeah, I think he perfectly knew at the time that he said just, well, who cares? Who cares what they say? I'm going to be the best again with Wings. It will be successful. So let's get them angry. You can imagine, Sam. At the time, Paul was on the spotlight from 1963. So there was 13 years. Nowadays, that is touring again. It's 50 years or something. So I think being in the spotlight, it's natural for Paul. It's something that can change you much, because when you do things and you perfectly knew that you are going to be criticized, are going to be assessed, are going to be, you know, loved. Everything you do, it has an impact on someone else. It is not. These are very, very common with people.
Would you say Cook of the House is a brave move on Paul's part?
No, I don't know if it's a brave move. I don't know. It's just a casual move, maybe. Then I don't think it's brave. Wildlife was brave, in my opinion. Cook of the House, yeah, you know. everyone knows that if you want to talk and you don't like the song, the thing is you don't like the song, and maybe you can say, well, you don't like the song because you don't like Linda or something like that. That is not true in my case, because I always liked Linda. Also, as a vocalist, she was not a professional musician. There is nothing wrong with it, and she was really good, because I could not do it. Because she stood in front of audiences in America, and even though the parts of keyboard were not complicated, you have to do it. You have to do it. And it's not easy. So she was a fantastic photographer, and she had a place in Wings. And I think that Paul was clear with the other members of Wings. Mm-hmm. So she's my wife. I want her by my side, and she just add some keyboards. From a perspective of a musician, maybe it's not the best, but everyone perfectly knew about Linda, and she was a nice person, I think, so that's all. But I think she was a fantastic backing vocalist, not so fantastic as a lead vocalist.
So your mom buys you this album. Do you feel like you were missold a Wings album, when you would have preferred to have gotten a more Paul McCartney centric album? Was this, you know, Democratic album ever going to go down well with fans either?
No, I don't think so.
Big secret, isn't it? It's the big secret. No one really cares about Wings at this point, do they? It's still the McCartney show, isn't it?
Yeah, because the thing is, I've discussed this with my friends many times. And I never saw in Wings a real band. Don't misunderstand me. But Paul's personality is too big. It's too big. After the Beatles, it's Paul. And everyone likes Paul. And so I had some difficulties to understand other voices at the time. I was very young. I was 15 years old. So I noticed something in the lead vocalist, but I wasn't sure about the fact that maybe it wasn't Paul to sing or not. I can't remember at the time. So when I discovered it, I said, yeah, that's something that I like it, but not so much. So I would have preferred, absolutely, 11 songs sung by Paul. That is one of the best vocalists in the world at the time. So what you can do. So even though,
of course,
Danny can do a nice job, but he's more of a blues musician with a blues accent also in his singing. Paul has this melodic quality or this fantastic screaming voice that when you hear the note you never wrote, that is a song that I like very much, tell you the truth. I always, where's Paul's vocals? Can I hear Paul's version, please?
There is a version of Paul's vocals for
Must Do Something About It. Yeah,
yeah, and I do feel Paul's version is better, really. Unfortunately, it's a little more melancholy, and you are right, Denny Lane can deliver a better kind of solo presence from the band, and obviously Jimmy McCulloch had his own thing going on in quietly in the corner, kind of once per album. But giving it to Joe English was kind of... you can see why he politically did it, but artistically, it just didn't seem like the right move. He has the best mediocre voice ever. I even prefer Linda singing on Cook of the House, if I'm honest.
No, From this point, I disagree, because I think that, well, I always prefer Paul Svogel to anyone else, but in the case of Must Say Something About It, I think that the performance of Joe English is good, and it's so I prefer this to other performances in the album. In particular, I would say that I don't like very much the Wine Junko song. I think it's not really one of the best songs, and also it's too long. So that song, in my opinion, could have been not included on the album.
Yeah, especially following on from Medicine Jar as well. Mm-hmm. It seems very uncertain, and it's a bit of a letdown. There are many Wings albums and McCartney albums that have, you know, in recent years seen a bit of a revival. Do you feel like this album could possibly have the same thing, or do you think it's kind of forgotten about for the right reasons?
Are you saying if this album can be, you know, reassessed or evaluated?
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe like, you know, Dirt in the Grounds just had a big re-release and stuff like that. I mean, I couldn't see much excitement for this one, except for Silly Love Songs and Let Him In, which, as far as McCartney goes, like, this is probably the album where the singles have held it together the most, really.
Yeah, I think this album will suffer forever about the fact that there are other voices on the album. They reprinted in 2015 as a deluxe edition, and I think it was a little bit a low key thing.
Yeah, it was.
I think that I like all these archive collections. I have them all, and so I like every little detail I can discover. I'm always happy to discover.
The interesting thing about the deluxe edition for Wings at the Speed of Sound is that it has the most damning evidence that Paul was the best artist, because the demo versions of Silly Love Songs and She's My Baby are incredible. They are better than everything on the entire album for me. And just listening to Paul going,
yeah,
like, it's so magic. It's brilliant.
Yeah, the thing is that with an artist like Paul, I think that the demos are really a key element, and I would love to see a specific release with Paul's demos. Well, let's put together, I don't know, maybe 40 demos or something, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just put it in a box or something, because the fact is you can hear from the demo his fantastic ideas, and how clear is the idea? How clear is the idea about a possible arrangement? And it's a fascinating listen to me. Even though the quality, the sound quality, can be not the best, but to hear Paul sitting at the piano in his house taping this first version of Silly Love Songs or another song. It's a fascinating listen, yeah.
Yeah, there is yet to be a release that really captures the spontaneity and the magic of Paul in the studio. But Luca, I know you have to go soon, so I'm
going
to
start wrapping things up. Oh yeah, we can have another 5 minutes. Yep, no problem.
It's brilliant. So obviously, at the end of each of these album reviews, I like to do a little segment called Cannon Fodder, where we can get a compilation of Paul's best releases from each album, and we'll have the ultimate bare bones need to know guide of McCartney's kind of entire discography. And not fair that, you know, I pick 3 songs per album, because that means many classics don't make the cut, but that kind of what makes it so damn fun, really, because you really do have to think, and you have to think who's going to get left behind. So Luca, I'm going to ask you to pick 3 songs from Wings at the Speed of Sound that you would like to preserve for future generations. You know, which of these songs would you save from a burning building, and why?
Well, I think 2 of the 3 are quite obvious choices. I think Let Him In.
Yeah, you kind of have to go there, don't you? I'm going to let you off there, I think. I'm going to let you off.
Yeah, I think Let Him In. I like I like this song. Is special. I think it was nominated for Best Arrangement of the Year for the Grammy Awards, and I agree. I can't remember at the moment which was the winning song, but this song has a really clever arrangement. So I think Let Them In is one of the three. Like it or not, I think that Silly Love Songs, for a number of reasons. We can name, the bass part. We can name the harmony part, the vocals. Mm-hmm. But overall, I would say that this is a perfect example of how Paul can master the rules of musical harmony. So it's not easy to build a song like this. I know that it's very commercial. I know all these things can be criticized. The words "I love you," all these things. I'm just talking about the musical part, and it's a very ingenious song. It's not easy to compose songs like this. You have a sequence of chords, and then you put three different melodies on top, and you got to be a genius to do this kind of things. And when you listen to it, it flows naturally. So I like the song for this reason. The third one could be
this is the difficult one, but there's one or two that kind of seem to stand out more than the others. I'm interested to see what you pick.
I would leave out Beware My Love, because I wanna just to choose something more melodic. This is my choice.
Choice. It's fair.
I've always liked, even though it's a song that sounds unfinished, but I always love Some Fairy Anne. I think it has a
good pick.
Because as a jazz arrangement, if you listen to it, Joe English plays brushes and it has got all this, got all this, these horns, jazz kind of horns near the end. It's a shame that it's finished. It ends in 2 minutes or something, because could have been treated in a different way. But I like
it's funny you should say that, because Warm and Beautiful, the song that follows, is far too long in my opinion. So maybe if San Ferian had maybe a little more heft to it, maybe another verse and chorus, we would have been spared one of Paul's worst in my opinion. But that'll be for the full episode of the show. This has been a wonderful little side chat that I'm just wanting to squeeze in on this episode as we review Wings at the Speed of Sound. Luca, this has been a wonderful chat again. Obviously we've made it through to the other side now. Are there any closing statements you'd like to make about Wings at the Speed of Sound?
As all of Paul's releases, it's worth to be discovered, although it's not one of the best. And I would repeat this. Listen to the way this album is recorded. Listen to it with your headphones, and choose a pair of quality headphones, and go into the Abbey Road studio with this album for this reason. Believe me.
Absolutely. Now, Luca, obviously, the last time you were on the show, you were working on another book. You couldn't talk much about it. I was wondering, in that kind of 3 or 4 month interim, if you have any announcements of anything you want to know.
Well, I obviously, it's always difficult to anticipate the contents and the things, but I'm working on something that a nice, really nice book to follow this first Paul McCartney recording sessions for various reasons. But I think I will update you in the next month. I hope to have something near the end of this year or in the first months of 2018. It would be a really major publication. So, yeah, it could be really exciting.
Fingers crossed. I'm looking forward to what you have to say, and I will buy it. I will read it immediately, and obviously, a better excuse than none to have you back on the show and chat some more.
Absolutely.
I can't wait.
Absolutely.
And obviously, Luca, obviously, this has been a wonderful little side chat, my friend. It's been wonderful to have you back on the show. Obviously, you can talk Wings forever, and that means you're more than qualified to be on the show again and again.
And again. there was a title of Danny Lane songs. Yeah, thank you very much. I will be back as soon as you want me to be back. So, no problem. I always like to... Yes. To speak and to share my opinions and to listen to yours and so
of course. This has been a bonus episode for Paul or Nothing. I've been Sam, he's been Luca. I'll be linking to all of his work down in the comment sections below. Keep listening to Paul McCartney, folks. I'm sure No Words off Band on the Run is playing right now. Take care, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Thank you.